Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Some local universities are examining their ties to Big Pharma, specifically Purdue Pharma and its owners, the Sackler family. The Sacklers are listed as the 19th richest family in America, and they've been major donors to universities and cultural institutions throughout the country. But the role of the Sackler fortune is raising questions and protests from those who say that their money comes from the OxyContin opioid painkiller. Tufts University has hired an investigator to review the school's ties to the Sacklers, and that's largely because of a lawsuit from State Attorney General Maura Healey that alleges that the Sackler family tried to influence Tufts and its hospital. Here to break some of this down for us from Washington, D.C. is Nell Gluckman. She's a higher education reporter for the Chronicle of Higher Ed. Hi there.
Hi, Deborah. How are you?
We're okay. Well, we've been covering this lawsuit from Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey, and it's complicated, hundreds of pages long, but essentially says that the Sackler family used its, quote, intense relationship with Tufts to promote Purdue Pharma products. And it says even that happened even though the company knew that its painkiller OxyContin is addictive. Help explain sort of what your understanding is in terms of these allegations of the university's role with the Sacklers.
Sure. So according to the Attorney General's lawsuit, Tufts set up this pain research program with help from the Sacklers. And the program, you know, taught future doctors and pharmacists on how to manage pain. And there was a lot of input from the Sacklers, according to the Attorney General's complaint. And so that helped the company and the family burnish their reputation in the research community and the medical community in Boston, and also connect with doctors in the area who could potentially be prescribing these medications. Mm-hmm. They've also donated to other parts of the university as well, including the medical school, and a member of the family was on the medical school's board.
Right. And some of the allegations, you know, are very strong, and they're saying that that there was a lot happening at the university, that Purdue asked Tufts to rebut negative news coverage, and that there was certainly an expectation for the amount of money that the university was given. And we should say that the university issued a statement saying that it is refraining from public comment at this time because there's an independent review process going on, and it's hired former Massachusetts U.S. Attorney Don Stern. How significant is that move to have an independent review like this?
As far as I know, they're the only university with connections to the Sacklers and Purdue that has hired an outside investigator to look at it. Several other universities have said that they're looking into their connections with the family and the company and evaluating for themselves. But for Tufts, it seems like a much closer connection, and they seem to have responded with a more serious, a serious type of investigation that would really have an outside person examining what's going on there and what's been happening there.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's been a lot of debate in other universities involved, particularly local. Mm-hmm. We know about Clark and Harvard. Are those the universities you would mention as well?
Yes. At Harvard, there's the Arthur M. Sackler Museum, and there's been pressure there for the university to do something about that connection, suggestions that they change the name, but Harvard has said that they're not going to do that, that the original building came from funds from Arthur Sackler, who died before OxyContin came to market. Clark University similarly has said that its money came from Arthur Sackler, and they're not going to change the name of their science center. But Maura Healey's lawsuit also mentioned Boston University and Northeastern University, saying that they receive, albeit much smaller, gifts from the Sacklers and Purdue. At Boston University was a $50,000 gift for a program on pain on pain, and at Northeastern it was a $15,000 gift for a program on pain management. So there are a couple others, yeah.
Well, has any university given back money, renamed building, or removed the Sackler name from anything?
Not that I know of. Some universities have said that they're no longer going to accept funds from the Sacklers or from Purdue. NYU and Columbia University have said that they're not accepting donations at this time.
If we go back to the Tufts independent review by former Massachusetts U.S. Attorney Don Stern, what do we know about an investigation like that? Do we know, will a lot of the questioning be based on the Attorney General's lawsuit, say, for example, the allegations that there were presentations that were done at Tufts mm-hmm. that were supposed to be friendly to Purdue products? Now, we should say the Sacklers defended those presentations and said, yes, we certainly helped those presentations go forward, but we did not control any of the content. They did not compromise the content of anything that was happening at Tufts. So do you think those are the sort of things that an investigator would look at? It would be based on the Attorney General's lawsuit?
I would imagine that an investigator would look at the lawsuit and potentially start there. When universities hire outside investigators like this, the investigator can also, of course, talk to people, faculty members and people who have taken the program. So they're not just subpoenaing for documents and looking through those. They can conduct interviews and that sort of thing. So a report like this could go even deeper, potentially, than what the Attorney General has said in her filings.
Does Tufts face the most significant allegations of all the universities, would you say?
So far, I would say so from what I have seen. Yeah. They're not being charged here. But they certainly came up a lot in this complaint from January.
Mm-hmm. And what happens, do you think? How big of a player is the Sackler family and money from companies like Purdue Pharma for universities? I'm just wondering, do you think mm-hmm. that this is going to have a big effect, especially as we hear word that the Sacklers are considering filing bankruptcy because of the number of lawsuits here?
Yeah, that's a good question. I can't say exactly how much money they've given Tufts or other universities like it. The Maura Healey's complaint says that they have given hundreds of thousands of dollars, which, you know, for a place like Tufts, that wouldn't be a huge percentage of their budget. But, you know, it's probably part of a constellation of big donors that are certainly important to universities like this.
Okay. Nell Gluckman, higher education reporter for the Chronicle of Higher Ed. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
I want to turn now to what Tufts students are saying and what's happening on campus. Some Tufts students say an investigation into the role of the Sackler family and Purdue Pharma is not enough. Joining me now is Anarin Karnam Klein. He's an executive opinion editor of the Tufts Daily and a senior at Tufts. Hi there.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for being with us. Now, you have said that the letter from Tufts President Monaco that was written to the Tufts community last week, where he explained that there would be this independent investigation by former U.S. Attorney Don Stern, is not sufficient. Why do you think that?
There's a number of reasons I think that. Chief among them is, an investigation of this kind won't bring justice to people who've died in the opioid epidemic. And if what is said in Attorney General Healey's lawsuit is true, then I think Tufts has a moral duty to materially contribute to the recovery of people who face addiction, particularly addiction to opioids.
What would that look like?
Well, it could take a number of forms. Tony Monaco personally the president of Tufts University, personally lobbies the Massachusetts state legislature, so he could push for safe or supervised injection sites in Massachusetts, needle exchanges, greater funding for methadone clinics and mental health programs to help people get clean and stay clean. And he could give some of the money that Tufts took from the Sacklers, not that specific money, but he can give you know, comparable amounts to organizations that are doing harm reduction.
I'm wondering, we just heard from Nell Gluckman, and she told us that, you know, Tufts is really the only university that's taken this step to really investigate and to see what happened here. Because obviously, as we've said, the Sacklers and Purdue deny these allegations and say that, yes, they were benefactors, but they weren't trying to have undue influence on anyone. Does that help? You know, what do you think of the comments and that statement?
I think it's really telling that Tufts had to hire someone to tell them to do the right thing. I think that, you know, the Sacklers can deny all they want, but I think that the emails and the actions and the documents outlined in the Attorney General's lawsuit are pretty clear that Purdue and the Sacklers leaned on Tufts in ways that legitimized a medication that they knew at the time was addictive, and that in the time since then has contributed to the deaths of tens of thousands of people in the United States and thousands alone in Massachusetts. So, I mean, of course they're going to say that. They won't admit just in the court of public opinion that's what they've done, and they probably see it differently. But the material impact of their actions is death and suffering for thousands of people, and somehow they have to make that right. And if Tufts has to hire an outside consultant to tell them what their role in that was, then I don't know what to say other than the administration at Tufts has always been sort of calculating and morally bankrupt in my vision. But, yeah.
I wonder why. What's your personal connection to this issue?
So I come from New Haven, Connecticut. A lot of the people I grew up with became addicted to opiates. I've lost friends to the opioid epidemic. A lot of people I know have overdosed and died, or gone to prison, or have had to go have been in and out of rehab for years. Like, I've seen what OxyContin does to people. I've seen how it destroys lives, and the family that made that drug and sold it so openly, and, you know, in a sense corrupted medical science, if Attorney General Healey is correct, that they are wealthy and free and are not facing punishment, to me is a profound injustice. While there are thousands of people in jail for abusing prescription opiates or for, heroin possession after they got addicted to OxyContin and became opiate addicts, that to me doesn't seem right. Hmm.
You know, I just want to make sure that folks know exactly what Tufts did say in response to this. And they said this review by former Massachusetts U.S. Attorney Don Stern will determine if the school adhered to its policies and adopted best practices with respect to academic and research integrity and conflicts of interest in accepting those funds, referring to funds from the company. And it says Attorney Stern will present his findings with a team of academic leaders. It goes on to say if our existing policies and controls need to be changed or strengthened, that will happen. It sounds as if the school is taking it pretty seriously.
I'm a little cynical on this, perhaps, because that's the sort of language that they use every time someone demands something of them, and almost nothing in my 4 years here has changed for the better as a result of popular pressure, and maybe this is different, right? Maybe, you know, a lot more seems to be on the line here than in some of the political fights that students have been engaged in. But, you know, changing their investment practices 20 years after the fact, or changing who they take money from and how they take money 20 years after the fact, and doing relatively little else for their role in the opioid crisis it's peanuts. It's crumbs, right? They're not making any sort of reparation for their actions. They're not, even if they admit wrongdoing, all that results from it is a shift in policy and in terms of, you know, money going forward, and not some sense of restoration to the victims of the Sacklers, and by extension, the victims of Tufts University.
Would you say that you are in the majority? Do you think most people agree with you?
I'm not sure. I know a lot of Tufts students that I've talked to about this say it's the biggest scandal Tufts has ever been involved in. Everyone I've talked to at Tufts who has friends or family who are opiate addicts are really angry about this, and they really want Tufts to do something beyond just, you know, an investigation and a change to how it takes money, right? But that said, I don't know, you know, where 100% of the students are at. I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of kids here from pharmaceutical dynasties who might be sort of terrified by that sort of political implications thereof. And there are a lot of kids who just don't really pay attention to political goings-on or to, you know, the lives and deaths of heroin addicts in this country. And so I think of the people who are aware of Tufts' relationship with the Sacklers, I would say my view is, broadly speaking, the majority view.
All right, Anarin Canham-Klein, Executive Opinion Editor of the Tufts Daily and a senior at Tufts, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
A recent sensation in the Democratic primary for president is the 37-year-old mayor of South Bend, Indiana. Mayor Pete Buttigieg is showing particular appeal with young people. WBUR's Fred Tice reports on how those in a crowd at Northeastern University yesterday reacted to him.
School officials first invited Pete Buttigieg 9 weeks ago. At the time, they thought they'd need a room for about 150 people. Since then, interest in his campaign has exploded. Nearly 1,000 people filled an auditorium to hear Mayor Pete with an overflow crowd in an indoor quad. Some were working and in their 20s and 30s, but most were Northeastern students interested in a candidate not too much older than they.
He's a millennial. He's 37. Kind of in touch with what people in this room might be more interested in than other candidates.
4 years ago, Kyle Azuna went door-to-door for Bernie Sanders. A Northeastern senior now, he says he won't be campaigning for Sanders again.
No, I think he's too divisive in the Democratic Party right now. He did a good job of turning it left, but I don't think he's the one who could win against Trump in 2020.
Azuna says he wants a younger candidate.
Honestly, someone in my generation who is aware of problems that millennials will be facing in 20, 30 years instead of just the same old 70-plus-year-old person who's kind of disconnected from an increasingly larger portion of American society.
That generational shift in power is something 34-year-old Bobby Ortega, a financial analyst, and 29-year-old Tim Smith, a Chelsea school teacher, are looking for as well. Smith voted for Sanders in the 2016 primary. But this time, Ortega and Smith find it appealing that Buttigieg is a veteran.
I think that in order to make a well-informed decision on sending people over there and knowing what it's like, you might want to have served in a war yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. Yeah, and I, you know, we have the president now who dodged going to war a couple times. It's good to have someone who has experience in the room making decisions. And I think he had told an anecdote about how, I think the first, when he went off to get deployed, he had to, like, write a letter basically to his parents in case he didn't come back. And he said, like, having that, being that kind of headspace gives you a different perspective of how it affects everything.
Another former Sanders supporter, Christina Nguyen, in her fifth year at Northeastern, says someone else has assumed the mantle of the left.
Right now, Elizabeth Warren is running, and she's my senator. So the local preference takes precedent.
Primaries are not until next year, and Josue Espinosa is still looking for a candidate. He works at Massachusetts General Hospital. He manages a transgender health program and some endocrinology clinics. Espinosa asked Buttigieg a question about the Affordable Care Act.
Something that works in California will not work in North Dakota. Maybe, right? How do we address the diversity of our nation in every aspect, geographically, regionally, whatever it is?
Yeah.
And not a one-size-fits-all approach.
Yeah, so I think what we have to do is we have to be smart in mapping the things that aren't the same and the things that are. So the things that aren't the same, for example, is the availability of certain specialty care in a given geography, which may be very dense in a place like Boston, and the opposite in a place like North Dakota. And we can't let that overtake what really is universal, which is the extent to which everybody needs health care and everybody needs a way to pay for it.
Buttigieg said he wants Medicare for all who want it. Espinosa said afterwards, Buttigieg avoided answering his question.
Our country is very different. It's diverse economically, geographically, and I don't think that a Medicare for all who want it is something that will work.
A Northeastern freshman asked Buttigieg whether he supports free public college. Buttigieg said he opposes it.
Americans who have a college degree earn more on average than Americans who don't. And as a progressive, I have a hard time getting my head around the idea that a majority who earn less because they didn't go to college would subsidize a minority who earn more because they did, all the way to 100%.
Buttigieg said that might not be the best political answer given the crowd, but he received a warm applause anyway. The young audience responded enthusiastically to much that Buttigieg said about the urgency of responding to climate change, about his husband, about the importance of millennials and the generation after them participating in politics.
That report from WBUR's Fred Tice.